Hey y'all, it's Matty Kay coming back at you again with another week of Erase the State. I am co-hostless this week, but we do have a very special guest, the incomparable Sherry Voluntary. How are you, Sherry?
I'm great. Thank you. I'm incomparable.
Absolutely. I'm very happy to have you on the show. You're our best looking guest we've had so far. And probably the best looking guest that we'll have ever. So welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate that. That's really nice.
So Sherry, we have a bit of a mixed bag for an audience. There are anarchists, libertarians, Republicans that listen to the show. So for those of you, or for those of our guests that might not know you, why don't you take a few minutes and just introduce yourself?
Okay. Well, can I say something first?
Absolutely.
Anarchists are libertarians. There's not a difference.
Oh, I wholeheartedly agree. The libertarians that aren't anarchists yet just don't know it.
Yeah. That whole non-aggression principle and self-ownership, there are no caveats to that. So sure. I know when most people say libertarianism now, they mean like minarchism generally, because they are uninformed about what libertarianism is and the principles generally. And I'm sure some people are going to be upset with me for saying that, but there's no caveat to I own myself completely and you can't violate this. Like
it won't be the first show that we've upset listeners. So just go ahead.
Yeah, I'm used to it. I grew up in Chattanooga, Tennessee. I moved away for years and years and lived all over and moved back to Tennessee about 17 years ago almost, and became a libertarian. I thought I was a libertarian for a long time before I was, but I started listening to the Neil Bortz show out of Atlanta. And your listeners may be familiar with him because he wrote the Fair Tax book a long time ago. And so I thought I was a libertarian because, you know, I was fiscally conservative and socially liberal. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, you know. So anyways, I was really just a neocon. And about 4 years ago now, I think it was, we started reading Ayn Rand, and then heard the Tom Woods show, and we were anarchists. And I was an anarchist in like 4 months, probably. So
there you go.
If it took that long. But the last thing for me was the military, gotta have the borders and support the troops and all
right.
That was the last thing to really go for me. So,
okay. Well, so the whole reason for starting our show was that we don't do this every week. We were kind of bad at keeping on task, but, we want to try and bring different ideas and different thoughts about eliminating the government and seeking ways to eliminate government control from your life. We're not trying to bring down the government by growing a garden in our front yards or anything, but it might certainly help. Hey.
Yeah.
But, so I know that you're a homeschool parent.
Yes.
So that could be, I think, a great way to at least eliminate some state control of our children's lives and mm-hmm. kind of prevent some of the brainwashing that goes on. So why don't you take me through that? How did you get into homeschooling? What programs would you recommend for our listeners? Are you a fan of the unschooling, movement? Just take me through all that.
Yeah. Okay. So, I have to say homeschooling has been one of the best things I think I ever did. And I do think that, it's a form of agorism. Like at any time you can eliminate the government to the most smallest part, 'cause I still have to report to the state according to Tennessee laws. I have to do grades and attendance. But I basically don't have any interaction. My kids don't have any actual interaction with the state. And I love that. So the reason I started homeschooling, my son came home. He didn't come home. He was at home for summer break. And, between fourth and fifth grade and before fifth grade started up, he said, "Can we please just homeschool?" He hated school. He's a really bright kid. He wants to be a mycologist. He's almost 17 now. And really, really into Terrence McKenna and Paul Stamets. And so he's a very, very bright kid. He always wanted to be a scientist of some sort. And so we were like, well, I don't know. It felt like jumping off a cliff. You know, you get really scared because mm-hmm. you're so, I don't remember if I was actually an anarchist at that point. I was close. But you still feel like you're jumping off a cliff because I didn't feel like how am I qualified to do this? And I had thought about it before, but I never really researched into how to do it. So it was a big step, but once you do that, if you can get over your fear of like screwing your kids up, it's a really great thing. It's challenging as well. Like it's got its pros and cons. And like I'd say the biggest pro is that, you know, you're with your kids a lot more and you really get to know them and, see them grow and help them develop. And probably the biggest con is also that you're with your kids all the time.
Exactly.
For American parents in general, that's something to get used to because we ship our kids off to school for however many hours a day, more than they need to be there. That's for sure. And, we're not used to that. So that can be challenging as well. And, you know, it's just more personalities to deal with all day long. So, that's really how I started homeschooling. My son is, like I said, he's a more technical kid. So at first I just sort of pieced together a curriculum. I'm like, oh, here's some math and here's some whatever, and, you know, science. And I never had to do science for him. He just like did it himself. So it was really piecemeal and there was no like daily schedule, and he couldn't deal with it. He came to me and he said, like 4 or 6 weeks after we've been doing it, like, I need to know where I'm at. Right. I cannot not know how many days I have. Like, I need to know this is lesson one for day one and lesson two for day two. So
sure. Some structure.
We had to, yeah, that's how his mind works best. So, we used the Ron Paul curriculum.
Okay.
For him. And he really likes it. He's really excited this year to be doing chemistry. That's him.
I'm a chemical engineer by degree. So
yeah, you're a chemical
engineer. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, then I'm not that practical of a person at all. And I love hearing him talk about it though. And I love anyone who knows a subject well and is passionate about it. I think that generally makes me feel passionate about things that I really have no interest, like mycology. I could care less about mushrooms before my son got interested in it, and molds and whatever. But they're fascinating, and I've learned so much from him, and it's really broadened my world, just, you know, living vicariously through him a little bit and him teaching me a lot of stuff about mycology that I never would have sought out. So, that's one of the beautiful things about, you know, I know he's my son and I'm with him, but it's just a learning from anyone and listening to what people are interested in and getting to know them is, you know, it opens up things to you that you never may have considered. So that's been really fun. With my daughter, I did do unschooling the first couple years. And I was a little nervous. It wouldn't have worked for my son, Ronan. He was not about that. he's more like really mature and everything. And he'd been like, why don't I have, you know, a lesson plan? And
again, he needs the structure. So
yeah, absolutely. But my daughter, she really sort of came out of the womb knowing everything. So she didn't want people to teach her anything. So it was really difficult. And I was trying to teach her to read, and, she just wasn't having it. She would just fight me on it constantly. And I had heard of unschooling, but when I first started, I took this little quiz and that was like the lowest on, like, that wasn't for me. And I just wasn't ready for it. And I think as I broadened my understanding of homeschooling, it became more acceptable to me. So I did that and I was amazed. She taught herself to read. And the way she did that was by playing Minecraft. She wanted to play Minecraft with the other kids, so she taught herself to read. I never would have believed that I'd heard people say, well, I taught myself to read, or my kid taught themselves. I thought, that's just bullshit. You didn't do that, you know? But she did. And then she was concerned about spelling, because some of the other kids on there would make fun of how she spelled things. So now she's a really good speller too. And so I did that for a couple of years, and it was great. I was really impressed. I didn't think that she would pick up and learn as many things as she did. But children being what they are, and curious, and having, like, she's really into designing. She's wants to be an artist. She's an amazing artist already at almost 9. But she would design these Minecraft skins on some site, and she had all these followers because her skins were really neat. And, you know, she learned a lot about design just from doing that. And I got her this art computer program with a, you know, you can draw and make it come up on the screen, and it's really neat. But she's learned so much just from those kinds of things. So that was great. And now I've been doing a co-op with her. So what it is she goes Monday and Wednesday and half of Friday. I take her to this school, and it's less time than a public school as well. But it's also a really, like, they have a school structure, but they really kind of just partner with you as a parent, even though they have a curriculum, which I've enjoyed, and it's been really good for her. She likes it. So that's working for us right now. So that I can have a little bit of time to work and do some things during the day.
Sure.
Now that I'm doing all this crazy stuff. So, it's really amazing. It's wonderful. I know a lot of parents are scared of it, and it does seem scary, but you don't have to be brilliant to teach. I mean, like, that's always the thing. What qualifies me as a parent to teach?
Don't sell yourself short. Don't sell yourself short.
Yeah, right. That's true. And also, you know, there's Knoxville, where I live in Tennessee, is a very homeschool friendly town. So there are a lot of resources here. There are a lot of groups. Not everywhere has it as good as far as the amount of people that homeschool and the amount of businesses that are open at for homeschoolers during the day to go do fun things. And so all this stuff. But there are community resources, and people want to help you. Like, people really, I think that's one thing that maybe gets underestimated, is how much other people enjoy helping young people learn something, and just helping, listening to them talk about what they know. And it's a kind of a delightful thing to listen to young people learning and growing and what they're passionate about. So I think there are a lot of people out there who just want to help and do those things. So I've not had a problem personally, but of course I do live in a really homeschool friendly town for the most part. There are people here who don't like it.
So when you first started out in homeschooling, and forgive me, I'm not a great student, so I was not paying attention to the timeline. where were you on your path to anarchy when you first started homeschooling?
Yeah, it was right around, I either had just become an anarchist or was just before that. I'm not sure it was, but it was around the same time. And you know, it was a big transition in my life, because I never thought I would be anti-state, you know, like I never even thought in those terms of the state, and, you know, it didn't ever compute with me. But the more I became an actual libertarian, because I was a libertarian for like 12 years, I called myself one before I realized that I really wasn't. And I didn't know there was a philosophy that underpins libertarianism. And so, once I started reading Ayn Rand, and, that sort of gives you a really good grounding in individualism, and then listening to Tom Woods, and that went in no time. Just the education factor of his show, I learned a ton of stuff, and there was no other choice for me. Like, I couldn't not be anymore. So it didn't take very long at all. I think like 4 months, I think, is what it was. So
what are your plans? I know you said your son is, he's in, I guess, high school, right?
Yeah, he's a junior this year, a homeschool junior. Right.
So what happens upon graduation? I know if he's going to be a scientist, right, it's probably helpful if he goes to a university of some sort. Yeah. So what are your thoughts on that?
Wow. That system is really screwed up.
It's an understatement.
Nicest way to put it. Yeah. You know, but it is what it is for now. And until more people are willing to, you know, accept apprenticeships and things, which a lot of companies are, I just don't know how available that is in the scientific world. So that'll be a learning process once we get there. And he probably will be starting. He can do dual enrollment in Tennessee now. We get
okay.
the Hope Scholarship, and it's 3 years of college, you know, free.
Mm-hmm.
But of course I'm going to take that because I've paid that money and
absolutely,
you know, I'm not going to be dumb about that, but, I don't want to give it, but if I'm going to be forced to, well, dang it, he's going to take benefit from it, but, he can do that. I don't know if we may have missed the deadline for this year because the summer got away from me bad, but, so yeah, he's going to be doing that. I really think college is most of the time not necessary.
Mm-hmm.
So I think back to, you know, the early days of this country where you had like Harvard was they trained ministers and I think lawyers and maybe doctors. Like it was professions that were very technical, whatever. Sure. Like you probably want to, you know, I don't even know. I mean, you would know better than I do as far as engineering, but I would imagine a lot of that can even be done as apprenticeships and things, but you might want to go take a few classes.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. I think a classroom setting certainly helps, at least for, you know, like the first couple of years of that, like a technical degree like that, where you're really just learning and trying to memorize, you know, calculations and constants and, you know, all the useful items that kind of form the base, right? But yeah, at least as far as practicum is concerned, I didn't learn fuck all in college. I mean, I learned it and then I forgot it and I never used it again. And then every now and then it kind of crept back in. And I'm not an engineer anymore. I'm in sales now. But, you know, you see some things and you kind of like, man, I wish I would have paid a little bit closer attention. But by and large, it does not prepare you for the working world.
Right.
And even engineers, you know, they have for the past probably 20, 30 years now, engineering students really need to try and do some sort of co-op program to where you take a semester off and you go work as an engineer and you really figure out, okay, this is what actual engineers do day in, day out at a job.
Yeah.
I was not a good student, so I didn't do that, but,
but you must be good enough to get an engineering degree. Cause that's especially like chemical engineering is not an easy thing. And I don't want to downplay people's degrees because they did that work and that's a process. Just doing that, you grow up a lot just going through that college rigmarole. But I like Praxis, that model that has come out within the past 10 years, whatever it's been, 5 years.
Right.
I think that's really great for a lot of people. Most people aren't chemical engineers, right? Most people aren't engineers.
Exactly.
So, you know, they don't really need that. And I think a lot of, I read an article a while back where there's some big companies that are starting to not even look at a person's college credentials really for interviews and things because they've started realizing that they didn't get better employees necessarily by looking for the most qualified with degrees applicants. And real world experience, like you were saying, it is really important. And I'm the kind of person who kind of learns that way. I'm terrible. I don't read the manual. I just go in and start like trying to figure it out. And then I'm pissed off and think I'm stupid, but it's because I didn't read the directions. Then I'll go back and read what I need to know. But I like to mess around with something.
The means, right?
Yeah. You know, I used to be a photographer, but I was never a gearhead. Like I'll still hear people talk about camera bodies and lenses and I just kind of glaze over a little bit. But I knew what I liked and I knew what I needed. And if I needed to learn something, I learned it. Like I went to photography school for, I don't remember if it was a semester or two semesters, but everything I really needed to know, I learned off YouTube, honestly,
right.
or I bought little courses or whatever. Like there's so much information out there. And yet so many people are still fooled into thinking that the only way to get an education is to go to school. And as we know, you don't get an education from going to school necessarily. You go to school, but education comes from actual experience often. And So I think there are some things, there are benefits to learning in a classroom setting, but that's very few things generally. And a lot of what's wrong with the college system isn't necessarily, it's not bad if you need to take a class to go take one, but the college system is so co-opted by the state and by the same kind of, I don't know if you'd call it, what do they call it, social Marxism or whatever it is.
Cultural Marxism.
Cultural Marxism. Yeah, there's these campuses are their own culture. Like even UT, which, you know, Knoxville, Tennessee is not a bastion of liberalism.
Right? Sure.
But I mean, this is Bubba Central, but UTK is very liberal. And I don't know if it started there, but I know where they were one of the first schools to really be big on the, you know, 11 million genders things and the different names for them or whatever. So, you know, that's in Knoxville, Tennessee. So there's really an infestation of that kind of collectivist thinking, which, you know, you say the liberal and conservative, there really are no liberals and conservatives. There's no left and right. There are very few people who are genuine liberals or genuine conservatives. They're mostly all just a different flavor of neocon.
I would tend to agree.
And they want to bash you over the head for different things. And that's what people, my friend Grant, the station here in town that I used to have a radio show on, he did the morning show. And, I used to go and do Tuesdays with him. They called it Voluntary Tuesdays. And we got to talk about anarchy for several hours on the radio every morning, which was amazing.
That's awesome.
Yeah, in Republican heavy, I mean, y'all don't even understand. The Republicans have Tennessee on such lockdown. It's incredible. Memphis is like the only bastion.
Well, I am in Texas, so aside from so Austin, you know, and the Valley and, like, I guess the county that Houston is in, which is basically Houston, yeah, it's red. So
yeah, it's the same kind of mentality. I know Texas and Tennessee have a long history together.
Yes.
So
there's some would say without Tennessee there would be no Texas,
and that's probably true.
That is true.
So in you know, Tennessee, it's not like this big liberal haven, but you still have this sort of encroachment of that sort of leftist progressivism that people are really, you know, you see it even in elementary schools when. Mm-hmm. My son, before he started going or doing homeschooling, one of his elementary school, they had the PTA, which you wouldn't think would be like this sort of social manipulation scheme, but it was. Their theme for the year was growing green giants.
Oh my God.
You know, and I'm like, what is this? I even asked him, like, what does this have to do with parents and teachers being involved in this school? Nothing. That's a totally separate, like, that's not even what your organization is supposed to be about.
Right.
So, you know, it's on every level. Yeah. And I mean, look, I just teach my kids, like, my son wanted to go back to public school this year. It ended up not happening for him, but, we have to give our kids enough space that they can try and do things. My daughter, even at her little co-op, they say the pledge and she doesn't do that. She wasn't. And I was really proud of her. She came home and apparently some of the other kids have been, I wouldn't say it was bullying, but it was definitely pressuring her. And you know, if you know it, you should say it and put your hand on your heart and really, you know, thankfully nobody body slammed her and gave her head injuries.
That was terrible.
What a piece of, I don't know if I can cuss on your show, but
please,
he was he's not a nice human being. He's just a subhuman piece of shit. And that's why you carry right there.
Exactly.
That man should maybe not have been shot, but he should have shit his pants for sure. He should have had a gun pulled on him.
at times like that, like, you know, I'm bought into the non-aggression principle.
Right. That's aggression.
But at times like that, it makes me want to track people down and do very bad things.
Yeah, and that's true. Like it's human, the injustice of that for a grown man to put his hands on a young man like that, a young person. I hesitate to even call him a young man because it makes it sound too equal. That was an he just is out of childhood. Like he's 13 years old. He's not even reached the full potential of his body. And this grown man is going to put his hands on him and harm this child that he doesn't know for doing, not doing something that he wanted him to do. And so this is what I find laughable about when my conservative friends, you know, they cry all the time about, you can't even wear a MAGA hat and the liberals are all over you and violent. They're just as violent. And exactly. Everything they do calls for violence. They don't see themselves as violent. And I never did either until someone pointed out to me, hey, if you don't pay your taxes, what happens? Mm-hmm. Oh, people with guns show up. That's violence. You're advocating for violence. But people aren't taught to think like that. We're taught that it's our fair share, that we need to pull our weight and do our part. And I think if I've learned nothing from Jordan Peterson, I've learned that people want to be responsible. They want to carry the burdens of adulthood and be competent. And so that plays on that human nature that generally most people have to want to be a good person and respectable in their community. So I think it's a very subtle manipulation, but it's there. And once you see it, I mean, it's not subtle at all to people like us now, but it's, you know, the whole taxation is theft. I think we forget how radical that is. That's a really radical idea for most people. And that's a statement that most people would go, well, what do you mean? How would we pay for the roads? What about schools? You know, they have all these questions and they're understandable. It gets tiring to answer those questions all the time.
Well, as Eric July says, fuck them hoe ass roads. Right. But, exactly. But no, you're right. And it's, the funny thing is, you know, growing up, you know, I grew up in a Republican household and we would say things like that, right? But when it comes down to it, no one really means it because that means they have to start cutting into services like that, right? But so they'll say it, but what they really mean is, well, I just pay too much.
Right.
They're stealing too much from me.
My fair share is too fair.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd like them to steal less from me. Thank you.
Right.
Just steal they're not more fully from my committed. Neighbor. What's that?
Just steal more from my neighbor.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I think that's something that, you know, most people don't have principles. They mentally ascend to ideas, but they don't really hold principles. When you hold a principle, and I've been accused of this many times, being a purist, and I am. Look, there are two things you need to know to be a libertarian, and one is that you own yourself completely, and the other is that there's only defensive violence is the only ethical use of violence. So once you get those two things down, there aren't any caveats to that, like we said in the beginning. And so if that makes me a purist, I guess I'm a purist. I don't think that it's okay. And, you know, it leads me down roads sometimes that maybe I won't win. Maybe I won't like what the world looks like.
Yeah.
But freedom and safety do not mean the same thing. And I'm willing to have, you know, freedom provides more opportunities for people than safety. And so that's what I want. I want those kinds of opportunities for myself, for my kids, and for other people. I want people to be able to be the real masters of their own life and you know, see what they can do under their own power without interventions and regulations and all these things. So will there be rules? Yes. There's always going to be like a common law. It's, you know, of course you know this, people get really bogged down in, I think it's just the fear and they're not wrong to be concerned about certain things. I won't say they're not wrong to be concerned about what happens when you have no borders. Mm-hmm. That's not are no government state borders. There are plenty of borders, but so you're not wrong to be concerned about that, but you're wrong to not find out and build onto that and understand it. So, and I'm not going to say I know everything about all the arguments on both sides of that, but I am open borders because I believe that people have the right to freely move about this world on unowned land. So, I can't say that that's always going to turn out in the best situation.
Yeah.
But you know, it's people's rights are important to me. And if you give a little on one of the rights that a person has, then you might as well go ahead and just burst that dam open because the crack is there. It's like using violence. Once you've condoned the use of violence for something that you want, then the floodgates can be opened because, well, we did it for this good reason. Now we're going to do it for that good reason. And
right.
it doesn't, those kinds of things. That's what holding a principle is about. You stick to it because it's the right thing. And I believe that libertarian values are the right things.
Well, and that's how, at least in this country, this whole slippery slope discussion, right, is how we've gone from declaring war against the crown over, you know, like what amounts to about $20 a year in today's currency, to the government that we have now in endless wars all across the world, with the police forces that we have, you know, customs and border protection, be able to pull you over 100 miles inland. It's just,
right.
It's a slippery
slope.
No Fourth
Amendment.
Yeah. But it's a slippery slope and it took a few years, but here we are, right? You compromise one principle, you compromise one belief, and it's fucking turmoil now.
Right. And I think it's really driven by the two-party system, because just look at what's going on right now with Trump and, all of the gun talk about,
sure.
Yeah, and there were indicators of like this before. You know, he's been a Democrat all his life, and he said, "Don't worry about due process. Take the guns."
Exactly.
Like, I made a meme, and I think like 50 other people did too, with AOC saying, with a picture of her with those words.
Yes.
And several people who hadn't heard it yet and knew where it came from, like, "Oh my God, I can't believe she said that." No, that was Donald Trump who said that.
Actually.
Right, and. So that's the thing, is that when it, what I started to say earlier and I forgot, is that my friend Grant would always say, you know, that the Republicans and the Democrats are so far apart on the issues that I don't understand how this country's ever going to come together. And I was like, A, there's no coming together, right? Mm-hmm. That's not, what does that mean? And B, they're not far apart. They're the same exact people. They think they're different because the way that the issues make it seem different. But when it comes down to violence and force, they're all the same. They exactly. all want to do the same thing to you. That's why libertarians generally say, like, there's no left and right. There are people who want to force you to do things and people who don't. Mm-hmm. That's the only difference. Those are the two categories. And what happens on issues is irrelevant, because it generally comes down to somebody's getting screwed.
Right.
We don't know who it is yet, but somebody's going to get screwed.
Right. As long as it's enjoyable, which it rarely is when the government's involved.
Yeah. No lube or anything.
Exactly. Prison style. So I don't want to backtrack too much, but you mentioned your son wanted to go back to public school.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you feel about that? It sounds like you're okay with it.
You know, I wasn't thrilled, but he's a young man of 16 and a half, and I just don't think I need to tell him what to do with that anymore. If he is not a libertarian by now,
not going to be.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and I think I saw this mistake made a lot in the religious organization that I used to be a part of. And that was, as teens got older, and I think a lot of parents in general make this mistake, is when they're little, you give them too much room, too much leeway, because the consequences of their actions are relatively small. And then as they start to grow, a lot of parents will start trying to hedge them in more, you know, give them more rules, because their consequences become bigger. And by the time they're teenagers, when they really should be expanding and being more independent on their own, their parents are really trying to, you know, come down on them with all these rules. And I'm not saying you don't have standards that you have a right to in your home, but if I've raised my kids right, by the time they're 16, they should be able to make most of their own decisions. Sure. According to the kid too. I mean, like the young person, they're not children at that age, but, you know, he's a responsible person. He's more responsible than I am, probably. Like, he's really responsible. He always has been. That's just who he is. Now, my daughter, she may not get the same kind of freedoms at his age, but it's not because she's a girl. It's because she's a different person. And so we'll see when where she's at when she gets there. But he's proven that he's responsible, that he has good character. And so I don't worry about him. And I don't, he's going to make mistakes, but I feel like if he branches out more while he's still under my roof, I have more influence over him and how he handles those things. And so he's going to start his adult life when he's away from us more independently with a lot more experience and, you know, self-responsibility, under his belt. So I sort of look at it that way. Like I want to raise kids with, you know, I was an authoritarian asshole parent when my son was little, no doubt. I really was. And I've apologized to him for that. Cause that's what I was taught in the religious organization I was in, you know, mm-hmm. kids, you never lose a fight with them and every act of disrespect must be met with, you know, force basically. Sure. And so, and I still battle with that. Like that was a long time in the long part of my life that I was taught that stuff. But I've seen the difference in raising kids by my son in that way. And then my daughter with more of a voluntarist, peaceful parenting kind of style. And I'm not always perfect at it for sure.
Neither am I, don't worry.
Yeah. But it makes a difference in who they are and it makes a difference in the way they see the world and the way they see themselves as part of the world. Because I don't want my kids, like I want my kids to be individuals and I want them to not think like the crowd just because that's the way the crowd does. But I also don't want them to be so different that they can't enjoy life and the things that the world has to offer now. Because let's face it, in America anyways, life is pretty good for most people in a general way. And we're already such a small portion of the population. And I think tend to feel alone a lot.
Sure.
That there's no reason for us not to partake in other communities. Like there's more to life than libertarianism. I know people might get mad at me for saying that, but there is. You should enjoy life. Like just enjoy life and then teach people where you can. And the more you're out there in your community and people know you too, the more when somebody says, oh, that, you know, anarchist, we should go string them up. They're like, wait, I know that mm-hmm. person. She's not crazy.
Right.
And I mean, they may still think I'm crazy, but you know, you
well, can she's not develop that crazy. Okay.
Right. Because they believe like, it's like the Salem witch trials or something. They believe something about you that's not true. When they hear you're an anarchist, that brings into their minds, all that indoctrination that they've gotten for years and years about what that is. And they're thinking, you know, Mad Max, Road Warrior, Thunderdome exactly. type. And so, that really can be combated by you just being yourself. You're letting your freak flag fly, whatever, but being you and being out there in the community. And it took me a while to realize that, you know, I wasn't always an out and proud anarchist. Mm-hmm. I was really kind of scared at first, especially since I homeschool and I'm in Knoxville, Tennessee, where the Bubba is strong out here. Like the monster trucks with like a big, like they actually put a flag on the back of them. They'll put like yep. the Gadsden flag or the Thin Blue Line flag with their American flag. Oh, that's so good flag.
When they fly together.
Oh yeah. And, you know, the bumper stickers, you don't like it, you can leave. Or yep. infidel. I see that yep. one a lot. Infidel. Cause they're, you know, they're tough. They're going to stand against the Muslim horde. So, you know, or the one that kills me, the Thin Blue Line Punisher sticker on a cop car. Oh, I mean,
that's so
if
good.
I could call that aggression against me, I would. Like,
I mean,
I'll hate those back. Yeah. We're going to become vigilante. And they basically do. They take the law into their own hands. They
sure.
they don't give a shit about the law. And it protects them. But I forget where I was. I started thinking about cops and now my brain's like,
yeah.
Oh,
I told you we were going to get there anyway.
Right. Oh, I have a thing.
So I joked on our last episode that we're probably going to have to rebrand the name of our show to just like the cop show, because every episode seems to devolve into me just going on some fucking screed about the cops and what they've done yeah. this week. So, yeah. Hey, since we're here, I think you know a little bit about civil asset forfeiture and who enforces that the most, but the fucking pigs. So what you got on that, Miss Sherry Voluntary?
Oh my gosh. I can't tell you how abusive that whole thing is. And the, you know, it all goes back to the drug war, right? Mm-hmm. Civil asset forfeiture comes out of the drug war. It really got going in like 1984. They passed an act that basically gave, before then, police departments didn't directly benefit from robbing you on the side of the highway. So there was less incentive for them because that money, they took it, but it went into the ether, right? They didn't see it.
Right.
Now it goes directly into their pockets. So you have things like in Tennessee, it's really bad. Tennessee has a really bad grade with civil asset forfeiture abuse. I think it was D by the Institute of Justice.
Oh my God.
It was only a couple years ago, they had an article in the local paper here about the Tennessee police that had taken $100,000 of civil asset forfeiture money and spent it on catering.
Jesus Christ.
Because that, you know, they really need it. And this is the thing, you know, the police, they will say things like, don't blame us, blame the politicians. We're just doing our jobs. Oh, and yet God. They're still, as moral agents, when it comes time for a bill to come up or whatever, to kind of hone in the abuses of civil asset forfeiture, they fight it tooth mm-hmm. and nail. And they say, like, I was recently supposed to go to the state house and talk to them, but the police, you know, organizations, whatever, I don't know if it was police unions or whatever. I was just told the police put a lot of pressure on the legislature, who, of course, the legislators, politicians are whores. Exactly. So, and they want to look really, you know, tough on crime. And like, they love the cops because they've got to keep that law and order respectability, right? Cause that's what mm-hmm. their whole life is based on. So, they called up there to all the members and said that if they cut any of the civil asset forfeiture back, that they were not going to be able to police two specific things. And those things were child sex trafficking and illegal immigration.
Oh my God. Oh my God. So something right. really bad, and then something that all the Republicans care about so dearly that right. they'll sacrifice their own child to fight.
Exactly. And so, you know, that whole thing, like, those are just those two things, but yeah. you can spend $100,000 on catering, but you can't, like, it's just, it's so transparent when you see it, mm-hmm. when you really just scratch the surface, even on civil asset forfeiture, it is just absolute highway robbery. Like, it's literal highway robbery. So when they say road pirates, they're not kidding. That's a literal, that's a technical term. Like, they sure. should... They should have that on their job description. So, you know, when you can just take money from someone, and in one Tennessee county, the average amount taken by civil asset forfeiture was $45. $45. We're not talking drug kingpin money here, which that's what civil asset forfeiture was supposed to fight, right? So I gave a speech recently in Memphis, and I asked people just how many people in the audience have $45 in their pocket right now. And so almost everybody raised their hand. I was like, there you go. You must be a drug kingpin and going to use that cash for drugs, according to the police in this county. So it's on a whim. Like, that's the thing. There's no structure to it. It's, well, I know you said that you're going to, you know, buy a car with this money, or you're going to pay your rent with this money. But I think it's for, you know, drugs. And sure. so I'm going to take it. I smelled marijuana. I know we couldn't find anything because most people make the mistake of letting them search your vehicle.
Right.
Because they think, well, I'm not hiding anything. So, and it's always the wrong answer with the cops. Just never talk to them. Just don't do it. Just exactly. say, I'll talk to you when I get a lawyer. Then we can talk all day. And then, you well, know, of course, know. The lawyer will say, I'm not going to talk. You can't talk to them.
Did you see the video that came out a year or two ago? And it was two lawyers, and they're like, they're courthouse lawyers or whatever, but they're trying to make a funny video, and they're defense attorneys. So the whole premise of the video was one lawyer saying what happens when you get stopped by the cops, and the other lawyer saying, shut the fuck up. What do you do when the cops stop you? Shut the fuck up. What happens when you get interviewed? Shut the fuck up.
It's the whole video.
It's great. But it's the best advice. That could save your life.
Literally, it could save your life. So I mean, this is just one civil asset forfeiture is just one I don't want to say small because it's large, and we don't actually know how much money they take from people because in a lot of places,
why would they tell you?
Right. They don't, they're not required to keep records. Like it's, it's basically a way for them to get what they want. And what's the guy, the British guy who does the Oliver, something Oliver. He doesn't, I think it's on HBO, his show. Anyways.
You lost me.
yeah. John Oliver, I think
okay.
is his name.
Oh, yes. Yes. Okay.
He did a great show on civil asset forfeiture, and he used a lot of the clips from this. There's a great on YouTube little series that a Tennessee news station, I think they're out of Nashville, but I'm not sure. They did a 4-year investigation on civil asset forfeiture, and it's amazing. There's like, wow. They broke it into 6 parts, I think, on YouTube. I'll see if I can find.
Sure.
Because everyone should watch it. You don't have to be from Tennessee because these things are across the board. There are abuses in Illinois. One of the things they seized in a civil asset forfeiture case was a check for 34 cents. It was a cashier's check for 34 cents. And they took it. They took 12 cans of peas in one of their, like, it's ridiculous. And of course they don't charge you.
Yeah, but at that point, it's not even like they're getting no value for the peas. That's just, it's punitive, right? It's all it is them trying to exert and force their control on you and to let you know that you're not in charge here, that they are in charge. So we're going to take your fucking food.
Absolutely. It's exerting the kind of power over you. And that's what abusers do, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, some of it is just at their pleasure. They get pleasure out of torturing their victims. And exactly. So that's what they do. I'm not seeing it here, but if you can find it, go on to YouTube and look up civil asset forfeiture. There's a ton of information there and you'll come across this 6-part series. And it's incredible, but John Oliver used a lot of it. And one of the cops said, because there was a man, pardon me, who had said he was going to buy a car and he had the proof on his phone. He had the car. It was all pulled up, all the information and everything. And he had like, I can't remember, it was like $20,000, $19,000, something like that. And he said to the police officer, you know, I'm trying to get this car. He showed it to him. The police officer says, I don't care. There's no reason that any regular citizen should be carrying around $20,000 because apparently to this cop, you know, he even said on the interview, the journalist was asking him questions. He said, well, it's not illegal to carry cash. He's like, no, but the right place for that kind of money is in a bank. He's like, but it's not illegal, right? And he's like, no, it's not illegal. And so you couldn't prove that that was what he was going to use the money for. And he says, no, but he couldn't prove that he wasn't.
That's how we get in the situations that we're in today. It ain't illegal, but it ain't right, by God.
Like that is incredible. And that just goes to show you due process is not a thing.
No,
we don't have due process, especially while we have civil asset forfeiture. There's no due process whatsoever. The cop is judge, jury, and executioner on the side of the road because they make all the decisions and they hold all the cards. There's a Vice documentary on it. That's really excellent. It's only like 20 minutes long, but one of the things in that they show is that, they have a video of this cop. He's telling the person, look, I'm going to take your money, right? We're taking this cash. And I'm going to let you go though, but you can fight this in court. And in a few weeks you'll get a summons. But if you show up, we're arresting you. You're going to jail.
Jesus Christ.
He literally says that to them. And so what are people going to do? Like
there's
they stop
no
the work.
Way they're showing up.
Yeah. And I think the average, they mentioned in that documentary, I think, I've listened and read so many things that they're all running together, but that the average nationally amount of money that they take is $800. That's rent money for a lot of people.
Absolutely.
That's not drug kingpin money. They take a lot more too, but that's the average. And so you're talking about people who don't have bank accounts who are just going to pay their rent and they're getting stopped. And the first thing a lot of these cops ask is, do you have any large sums of cash? They're fishing for it. And if you're traveling in another state, you better be wary about having that out of state license plate because they're going to target you for it. So, it's sickening. It's, you know, what I always tell I have my best friend from high school is a police officer now. And, you know, we talk about this stuff and, you know, his line is always, it's not us, it's the politicians. I'm like, but you're a moral agent.
Again,
you cannot alleviate yourself of your moral agency ever, no matter if that's like saying that it's okay to hire someone to kill your spouse because you're not technically doing it. And that person didn't have to take the money and do it. So you're really off the hook because it wasn't me. I was just paying for it. They did the violence, but it's on their behalf and they couldn't do these things without you. So, that excuse is just so, it's so kindergarten and it's so like, I always think like with this whole issue of, you know, these shootings, which are terrible and nobody on, you know, the right, in harsh quotes, wants people to be shot. Like that's not it, but taking other people's rights because some people do bad things is never going to end up in a good place. And if cops who have sworn to uphold the Constitution, if there were any good cops, which of course we know there aren't, because of this, this is one of the reasons there are no good cops. They would have arrested a lot of those politicians by now.
Exactly.
All of them, actually, because they've all sworn to uphold the Constitution and not a damn one of them does it. And if they try to, they get fired. That's why there's no good cops, because they're either dead or fired.
Exactly.
There's not, because they cover for each, like there's so many things about that. They cover for each other. So even if you're not involved in a lot of this stuff, cops tend to cover for each other. So if you know this is going on and you're not arresting your fellow officers for the corruption that they're doing, then you're not a good cop.
Well,
keeping
that,
your mouth shut is not a good cop.
That to me is what the thin blue line actually is. It's not the thin blue line that keeps us safe from the terror in the night. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's the thin blue line is what keeps the officers safe from us.
Yep. It used to be
because we know what's going on.
Yep.
And we try and get some action taken, and every now and then a good cop does show up and they go, hey man, you know, Officer Joe down there, he's pocketing money and not turning into evidence and whatever. And well, that cop gets fucking fired. It's almost like clockwork.
There was just an article about it recently. I didn't actually read it, but where the cop that did the right thing got fired.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one that lost his job, and the cop that was doing the wrong thing, well, he got, you know, a slap on the wrist and he's back on the job.
Well, normally it's a promotion after a paid vacation.
Right.
So
it's, and I want to tell people too, you know, when you hear that the cop resigned, that's their way of protecting each other still too, because when a cop resigns, that doesn't follow him. If they're fired, they can't generally get a job with another police agency somewhere else. But if you resign, it doesn't matter. There was a cop, I can't remember all the details of the story, but it was a really terrible and clearly vicious murder by a police officer of someone in Chattanooga where I grew up when I was younger. Of course, he got away with it because the law protects him. And he went somewhere else and he was still a cop. I don't know if he still is, but he got another job as a cop after committing this horrible murder against someone. So the various ways that they can protect themselves and insulate themselves from problems, from actual accountability are many. And, you know, I always, my go-to with the, you know, the people who just are basically bootlickers is, you know, you say you love the founders, right? Let's talk about the founders of this country that they basically worship. And, you know, Madison told us about standing armies. He warned us about having a standing army, which is a problem in itself. But the police are the standing army against the citizenry of this country right now. And you don't have any rights when it comes to the side of the road. They can kill you with impunity because you just said something wrong to them. This another thing happened in Knoxville a few years ago. Somebody actually caught this on camera. Otherwise, no one would have ever known about it. The cops wait outside the bars at night, right? It's a high target area. And so they had this one guy, a college kid, young person, he'd gotten drunk and he mouthed off to the cops, whatever. They had him in handcuffs. His hands are cuffed behind him, his back, and he was still mouthing off. And one of the other officers starts choking the kid, just choking the snot out of him. And somebody happened to get it on camera.
Thankfully.
Before they knew it was on camera. Of course, they were denying it. But,
sure.
You know, and this is not, like, people think it's anecdotal. Like, it's just a few bad apples, right? No, it's systemic.
I used to think that, too. But there's too many videos that are existent on the internet now for it to be anecdotal. And even if it is anecdotal, that's a shit ton of anecdotes.
Right.
And all that does is it serves to build a case. Like, at a certain point, it becomes evidence.
Right. In any other circumstance,
exactly.
If you had someone who was a predator in any other way,
right,
that would all be circumstantial evidence against them. But
exactly.
The people that, you know, basically they just, when a cop pulls up, they're going to get on their knees and worship appropriately, accordingly. So those people, they're the problem with this country. Like, they're a huge part of the problem, because the violent arm of the law, they don't care if it's Republicans or Democrats in office and whose laws they're following. They teach you every day by doing things, carrying out things like, you know, red flag laws. Because I used to be kind of person that thought cops in this country would never take people's guns. They just wouldn't do it. They'll never, no matter what politicians do, they'll never be able to get cops to go along with it. I really thought that. And then after I stopped being stupid and became an anarchist, I realized, wow, they're teaching us every day that they will, because they do it now.
They actively take people's guns.
Right. And so, you know, like, that's one of the things when they pull you over and they find out you have a gun, they'll ask you that as if it's a crime for you to even be armed.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are so many issues with surrounding police, and we have to get people to understand that I don't love the job of policing the way it is right now, but even in a libertarian society, you would probably have some kind of police.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it'd be more investigations of murders and things like that, and actual crimes. There wouldn't be these, you know, no victimless crimes that we have so many people in jail for, but for actual crimes. But they would be like the fire department, you know, you call them when you need them, because that's what most, like, even now, police are historians. Laws don't protect people. Laws don't stop murder. They don't stop rape. They don't stop any of those things. Police are historians. They come after the fact and take a report for insurance. That's
exactly
Basically what they do. So they're not out there keeping you safe. Like, that happens. And I know they really promote when there's by happenstance, a cop actually stops a robbery in progress or catches a serial rapist in a neighborhood or something. And am I glad that those people are stopped? Sure. But that doesn't mean that any average citizen couldn't have stopped them too, if people felt more empowered to actually police their own communities,
mm-hmm.
and say, hey, what's this weirdo guy doing over there trying to climb in that window?
Sure.
You know, maybe I'll go find out if my neighbor's okay, whatever. Like, but people have been taught so much to, you know, opt for the proxy force instead of actually being personally responsible for their homes and their communities. So I really think that cops are such a huge core of the thought process problem that we have in this country with authority, because the real cancer is authoritarianism.
Absolutely.
And the belief in authority. So I think that's why, in general, Republicans are so enamored with police and military, is because it's a representation of that authority.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what their God is. So if we can combat that and talk to people about the police, I think we really start to, you know, make headway into that mindset of authoritarianism. And they're doing a good job for us. Like,
yeah,
they just keep giving us, like,
they're kind of making our case. it's been pretty easy lately.
Yeah. And especially with this stuff, like, I remember when baby Alfie in the UK was being murdered.
Right.
And I made this meme. I love memes. Oh God, I love memes so much. I made this meme of that picture with all the cops standing in front of the hospital.
Yep.
This is the thin blue line protecting the murderers of this baby. They let that baby starve to death.
Yep.
They didn't let that baby's parents be with him while he was being starved to death.
Yep.
while they didn't let him leave the country to get treatment. And that was the second one. I don't know if people remember, there was a baby before that, just like a year before, same sort of circumstance. They wouldn't let them leave the country. People in the United States raised the money even.
Right.
And they still would not release the child. They kidnapped this child and then murdered it. And it's, those two were publicized. I think about all the times it's not. And it happens in this country too. Don't sure. let them fool you. Medical kidnapping happens all the time. But, you know, for cops, these are your, you know, the standard bearers of the state. They're that army against you. They're standing in between parents and their baby while the baby is starved. Don't tell me they won't take your fucking guns.
Exactly.
Like, that's their mindset. They're trained to look at you as an enemy, and they're trained to look at the law as virtuous. And so it doesn't really matter what the law is. It doesn't matter if Democrats made it or Republicans made it. They're going to follow it because I'm just doing my job. And that's what they're taught. They're just doing their job. And they'll just keep doing that job because guess what? It's hard for them to not do that job, to not have that power over people. It's very intoxicating to have that kind of power, and it's very hard to give it up.
Well, Sherry, thank you for our pig segment on this show.
Welcome.
Anything else? Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say my co-host Alan on Postcards from Somalia. He like always has like this little countdown for how long it took me to start talking about cops.
We probably need that on our show because it happens basically every show. But it's so easy that like the problem is so pervasive that it ties into everything. So it's a hard topic to avoid.
Law is, you know, legality doesn't equal morality, and not enough people understand that. And so that's part of that whole, you know, it's a cycle. It's a vicious statist cycle.
Yes.
And that system, it's meant to oppress you. It's meant to rule you. It's meant to teach you that you're not capable and sufficient in handling your own life. And it does a really good job. They're really good at what they do. And it's not like they sit in back rooms and, you know, figure out, oh, I'm going to go after Sherry or I'm going to go after him. It's the system. You've got power that corrupts people in all these different areas and all these organizations, and they're all corrupted, and that corruption works for itself and makes the state more powerful every time.
Sure.
So it's when people say, you know, I'm a minarchist because I believe we need government for this and this and this, you know, you're really just starting the process over. That's just like a reset button for the same thing to happen, because states collectivize your rights.
Mm-hmm.
You are not an individual. States are innately evil. There's nothing good about the force that they exert upon you and over you. So that's all I have to say about that.
Well, there you go. So before we get out of here, where can everybody find you? How do we support you? And what do you have coming up?
Sure. Well, you know, we were just talking about this. I don't know what I have coming up. I have to figure that out because I've been down for, this is my fourth week. I had a massive computer failure in my studio. So I'm getting back in the swing of things, but I will have a show again, either this week or next week. You can find me on YouTube, Stitcher, SoundCloud, any of those places, but the easiest is probably just go to Facebook and type in Sherry Voluntary. As far as I know, I'm the only one. So I'm pretty easy to find on those. Yeah, on those platforms. It's funny though. Sometimes people ask me, is Voluntary really your last name? Like, no.
That's so serendipitous that it worked out that way.
Right? Yeah. Who would have thought? Yeah, I'm pretty easy to find there. I have a show page and a personal page, Sherry Voluntary, the Sherry Voluntary Show. And then I also do a show called Postcards from Somalia, where our shtick is basically that we finally just moved to Somalia because we got told to move to Somalia so much. So that's a fun show. It's anarchists being mean anarchists. Like we let off steam. It's not high level interviews or education. It will educate you, but it's us being just, you know, letting off some steam because it's so frustrating sometimes.
I must be an asshole because I love that show and I find it hilarious. I don't think you're being mean.
Yay! Yeah. I mean, you know, I don't, if you've, we took some heat for, you know, our episodes of George Huge Waste Bush and John McCain after they died.
Rest in peace,
gave them the
assholes.
Respect they deserved. That was our tagline. So, you know, and all the respectability prags are, nobody's going to vote for libertarians if we talk like that. I'm like, oh, when we call a warmonger and a mass murderer what they are, like, I'm sorry, exactly. You don't like that. And your little voting feelings are hurt, but I'm not a whore for votes. I might be a whore in other ways, but I'm not a whore for votes. So that I'm not going to whore myself, my principles out to make people feel better, because that's exactly the time when you should call them what they were. They weren't ashamed to live that way. They weren't ashamed to walk around bald faced looking at people, telling them they're great when they're murdering babies. So I don't give a fuck what you think about them or what their families look, their families know who they are, and their families, if George Bush and John McCain's families are so snowflakey that they can't handle some stupid podcaster calling their father what he was, then they've got bigger problems than me, for sure.
Exactly. I wholeheartedly agree with you.
Right? Silly.
Well, Sherry, thank you for joining us today. Loyal
Thanks
listeners, you know what to do. Like, share, subscribe. Go follow Sherry, please. Sherry, I'll link all your stuff in the show notes. Oh,
and I have a Patreon. If anybody'd like to support my work, it'd be nice to keep being able to do it. So
yes, please support her. Don't support me. Support Sherry. Send me the link. I'll put it in the show notes. We'll see you guys next week. Peace. Cross a 57 Chevy with a hillbilly band. Had a little honky tonk filled with one night stands. Take a telly on fire with a gonzo steel. House space just to seal the deal. Yeah, top 40 country, better watch your back, 'cause this hot rod's faster than your Cadillac.